in that particular case there would be much discussion because this would be more or less what you want when you have
station wagon kind of fits.
Way, you would,
station wagon kind of fits into the family though. See, I was thinking of something that was kind of a masculine symbol like a Datsun 260Z.
Okay, well let's say something then like gun or fishing tackle.
Yeah, okay, a gun. You want to buy a new shotgun.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Okay. What happens? And it's going to cost $160.
I don't know where you can buy one for that.
Well, I don't know what the price of
guns
is.
$600. But
you have good taste.
Yeah,
All right, a $600 shotgun.
Okay, my wife and I came to a conclusion on luxury items like that. We set a set dollar figure, or a set percentage figure of the income that I was to turn into the family.
John, I hate to cut you off short here, but you kind of talk around things.
No, I'm not talking around things.
Yeah.
That's the way we made the decision. In other words, let's say I'm making $700 a month. I give her, let's say, $600, and what happens to the $100 is my business. This is the way we decided it.
What does she do with the
$600? Well, she would pay whatever bills we had, and what was left was hers, and what she does with it, I don't care.
What if the bills are $550?
Well, it's to say the bills are $650, then we're going to have to rearrange it or elevate the amount of money I give her or something.
Yeah, but you've got $100. What happens if the bills are $550 and she's got $6?
Well, suppose the bills are $350.
I'm saying suppose the bills are $550.
Then I would be getting, I would have to give her $25 to make it even. Is that what you're coming to?
Well, no, I'm asking you, what would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
That would depend on whether this was a steady thing or an occasional thing.
Okay.
In other words, if occasionally the bills might come out where that she had a short month, the next month, however, they might come out extremely low because we don't have a set.
What if she came to you, John, and said, hey, John, you got $100 to spend any way you want this month, and I've only got $50 to spend the way I want this month.
What would I do at that point?
Yeah.
At that point, I would ask for an accounting. I'd say, well, where did the six go? And if I felt that, I'd want to know where the six went, wouldn't you? And if it went, and then I would feel that she was shortchanged, and yeah, then I'd give her the whole $100 if that's what it said.
I see. Okay.
But first off, I'd want to know where the six went. You know.
I see. Ron, do you have anything to say about this?
I was wondering, John. You know, you mentioned that you and your wife are different.
Yeah.
I was wondering what the differences are. How you see the differences?
In what area?
Between you and your wife.
Any area. Any
What's
area
the
at all?
Difference between you and your wife?
Enormous differences. We have about zero in common. It's amazing that we've been married as many years as we have because we have absolutely zero in common almost.
What are the differences between men and women?
I didn't follow you, Doug.
What are the differences between men and women?
Oh, there is... this would depend on the individual male, and there might be a lot of differences between any two individual male and female, depending on what they...
Well, no, we recognize that there are certain physiological differences,
right.
Of course, but aside from that, what are the differences between men and women?
Well, that could vary enormously, Don. I have...
Are there differences between men and women other than physiologically?
No, because I know women that are utterly masculine and men that are utterly feminine, according to the roles.
You're saying, then, that there are no differences?
Other than, let's see, you got me, other than physiology. Okay, not that personality doesn't change to the point where they interblend. Not that the individual personality don't change till they blend, but getting back to...
Are you saying that there are no differences generally between men and women, or there should not be, other than physiological?
Well, you're going to really pin me down, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
exactly, John.
Okay, fine. Let's say that you can take I know women that...
No, you're individualizing now. Let's just talk in terms of men and women.
Okay, let's talk in terms of men and women.
You lick the fig leaf, John, you see something different
yeah.
on a man. You lick the fig leaf, you see something different on a woman, okay?
Right.
All right, besides that.
No, I would say there's not enough difference to be worth discussing.
Oh.
Other than perhaps, you know, the man is maybe a little physically stronger in some areas than the woman and so forth like that. But you mean as far as mental capacity?
Sure, if you want to talk about that.
I don't think there's any difference in mental capacity, whether it's through training or what.
Okay.
Most women tend to be less ruthless in business than men.
Not all women. You're less ruthless in business, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh. Of course, there haven't been too many women in the position of being able to be ruthless in business.
I said most women, not all women. I know several women that are as ruthless as anyone would care for.
Okay.
Know?
Well, John, we're going to go on to another call. I think your call has been very enlightening because it seems to me that I hear that you are... As George and I admit, certainly we have been chauvinistic in the past and still are to a degree now and are trying to change. I'm wondering if you are willing to change.
In what area?
Regarding women's people's liberation movement.
Well, I don't see any. It depends on the society you live in.
No,
I don't think
you know
liberation
the,
would work very good in.
You know the society we live in. Would you be willing to make some changes if all of a sudden your wife said, "Hey, John, listen. Things are not so yippy-skippy. I'm feeling differently these days. I feel like
she goes through this continually. She's in college, and of course she's being stimulated by after 13 years of marriage. Now, this gal's only almost 13 years of marriage.
What if she wanted you to make some changes? Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good.
But I'm saying, in other words, you know, of course she's changing very rapidly. She's been married since she was just barely 17.
Yeah.
And now she's went back and enrolled in college, and
good for her.
Of course, this is a radically different atmosphere than taking care of three children at home.
Do you fear this?
No, I have argued with her about it, but she assumed it was fear of it, but it was not fear of it because she was taking psychology and sociology, and I have a very dim view of psychology in general.
Oh.
And
what is your dim view of psychology?
Well, just it is useful in certain fields. It isn't useful, you know, necessarily useful in what I'm doing, and I just don't.
Well, psychology is a kind of study of the mind. And,
right. Well, a lot of the people I seem to end up doing business with don't seem to have any, if you follow me. And you know, it's just that I'm not that interested in psychology. I have you know.
You are interested in the workings of the mind, though.
Right. All right. I'm aware of what it is.
Consciously, unconsciously.
She just seems to get fired up and very enthusiastic, and I'm not you know, looking at this as a cure-all. Like behavior modification, the rest of this stuff, and I know too many people that you could sit down with 10,000 psychologists, $10 million, and when you got done, they would be exactly the way they were. You know, i.e., they think with their fist or a whiskey bottle or something, and nothing you're going to do is going to change them.
And I think you're one of them.
No, I'm not the violent type. Not for many years.
One who does not want to change.
In what way?
Anyway, supposing your relationship were going to end if you didn't change.
Oh, I would have to change.
Oh, you mean
that? Don't mean I would have to. In other words, the viewpoint is, Don, if she says she wants to study psychology, that's fine. I'll tell her, go ahead. I want you to study it. But if she comes home and asks me, what's my opinion of it? I'm going to say I have a dim opinion of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it wouldn't matter what it is. I am entitled to have an opinion on the subject. This don't mean that, you know, she can go ahead and get a PhD if she wants to in psychology. I could care less. She can go out and get a job at it. I could care less. But when she gets all done, I'm going to still have a dim view of it because...
Because why?
What?
What is the reason for your dim view?
Well, like I've been around for a number of years and I worked in security and different things like this. And I know too many people that psychology just has, you know, zero effect. They've been up to Vacaville and they've been through the system and this and that, and they come out with the exact same thought. You know, they're still thinking the code of the hills 200 years ago, and nothing you're going to say or do is change them.
So you feel that because in your security work you've seen some criminal patterns that have not been successfully changed by the psychiatric treatment they got. Is that correct?
I don't say that psychology is useless. I think it's extremely useful in sales. It's extremely useful in marriage counselors. It's extremely useful in a lot of fields. It just, when she gets the idea that it's a cure-all, nothing is a cure-all, though. Nothing is a cure-all. I mean, you know, there's summer and winter, and day and night follows it, and there's always going to be highly intelligent people, which... You don't
well, John, I want to cut through a lot of stuff here.
Okay.
All right, I am going to go on to another call because I think we would need some fresh viewpoints in this whole area, and I certainly want to involve our guests in all of this. But when you say that nothing is a cure-all, that's true. Penicillin, for example,
right?
Penicillin is considered the miracle antibiotic. I'm allergic to penicillin. I wear a chain around my neck that says I'm allergic to penicillin. I can't take it.
Right.
It kills me, right?
But my objection to her.
All right, but penicillin nevertheless has saved millions and millions of lives and has combated billions and billions of infections. But the point is that when you generalize and say that you take a dim view of psychologists, I just want to find out the reason for that dim view of psychologists. Is it because you have seen criminal behavior that hasn't been changed?
I have seen criminal behavior that has not been changed. I've seen, when I was a kid, I used to ride with bike groups and this.
Never mind the life history stories, but let's look at, when you talk about behavioral modification, let's look at something like, you see, if, let's say Freud was the daddy of it all, okay.
Okay.
All right, Freud was the daddy. And people, most psychiatrists and psychologists will perhaps have modified their approach to therapy than the traditional Freudian approach. But things are growing constantly. We have a thing in San Francisco called Delancey Street, which apparently is highly successful. Now, this is something run by those who have been in it.
Right.
And suddenly...
I'm not saying it's not useful, Don.
Okay,
remember saying it was not useful.
They're using behavioral modification.
Right.
And, okay?
I'm saying I personally...
I would like to see you open your mind up a little bit.
What, to it? Well, I've read...
No,
there are
lots of things. Lots of things.
That, you know...
No, I would like to see you open your mind up to a lot of things.
Such as what?
Oh, everything. Everything. I think... I get the feeling that you have a very narrow view of life.
I have a view of life based on my own experiences.
Mm-hmm. And I don't get the feeling that anybody can say anything that you're going to be pretty open to.
Oh, I can't say that. I've made a lot of changes in a lot of areas, but there's certain areas I don't make changes in. You know, I am a conservative. There's no question about that. But
when you say conservative, you mean that a conservative kind of sticks to his guns and...
some of them, I think, stick to it beyond all reality. You know, the world does change, and you have to accept the changes, but I don't know. I think that maybe it changes too fast in some areas, or maybe it just changes too fast for me.
Perhaps so. Okay, John, well, thanks for talking with us tonight. I'm going to go on to another call.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tree. There we are. Well, what we heard, I think, was a staunch, straight-line conservative who intellectually says he accepts certain things, but emotionally does not. Is that what you heard?
Yeah, that was the feeling that I got, and I kept feeling conflicting feelings and hearing conflicting ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard for me to know where John was, really.
Yeah, yeah. George, you have any response?
I have to be careful about how to respond.
Oh, you can be as open as you want to be.
Well, but I want to be careful because I don't know Don, and I don't know how I would respond on the other side of the line, how I would talk to you, how much I would reveal of myself.
Yeah.
Maybe I would behave the same way that he's behaving. So I think we get a very incomplete picture of the way he is.
Yeah.
I think he shows in some ways that he's open for changes, and I think he is.
Well, now let's talk about the changes that a man like John, and I suppose we've kind of stereotyped him, and that may be unfair, but nevertheless, we do kind of put people in bins, mm-hmm. and say, here you are. Let's suppose John could adopt some changes regarding, let's say, his wife's study of psychology. Apparently, she's really deep into this.
Mm-hmm.
What advantage would it be to John in his life if he could adopt some changes and be more open to his wife coming home? She wants to talk about her studies in mm-hmm. psychology, and she wants to talk about behavioral modification, things like that.
What changes, what good would it be for him?
Yeah, for John, because we have to think of the advantages would be for the individual.
Huh? Yeah, well, it's quite obvious that this is something the wife wants to do, mm-hmm. that she feels happy doing. I think the acceptance of and respect that he may show towards her for recognizing that this is something that that she likes to do may result in a much better communication between them. She may also feel more responsive to what he wants to do. And I think that's what it's all about, to listen to each other and to recognize what they both want to do.
I kind of have a feeling that when she comes home and says, and she's had just a great lecture today on behavioral modification, and it really hit home. Wow, this is, in her mind, it's an absolute breakthrough. Or maybe she heard a lecture on primal screen therapy or whatever, and she comes home and talks to John about it. She wants to talk about it. John, I get the feeling, wants to argue about it. He wants to say, you know, that's a bunch of baloney and all that stuff. How could John respond differently so that it would not be destructive to the relationship? He could still hold his views. She could still express herself. How could John respond to her wanting to talk about things that are kind of radical to him?
Well, maybe the issue is that she may be talking about something that he may know less about. She may be much more informed, and that if he can acknowledge, I don't know if that's the case, but if that would be the case, if he can say, you know, I don't know too much about it, and can be honest, then he wouldn't have to become very defensive. Then if he does not acknowledge that, then he would probably be angry and would respond in a way that would be, I assume, destructive to their relationship. But one of the issues is that when a woman wants to fulfill herself, you know, she may do that in such ways that she may know more about the husband in some areas, and he will have to accept that and find some ways to feel good about himself. Mm-hmm. That becomes his problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because she is studying behavioral modification, he is not. Therefore, whether it's a viable a therapy technique or not, she does know more about it than he does.
So it's very hard to talk on equal grounds, and he may feel very uncomfortable.
Do you get the sense that either one of you, that John feels threatened by her gaining this further knowledge?
Again, a word of caution. It's hard to tell right now with this conversation really what goes on in his mind. I don't know whether Ron has any feelings. Do you?
Yeah, well, part of it would be to echo what you're saying. I don't want to put some part of John's life on the line that may not be there or may not really be there except as I hear it.
Yeah.
As I heard John, I would feel that, he could gain from being more open with his wife. It's really difficult to be in a situation listening
sure.
to someone over the phone.
Yeah. And also we have, talking as we are now, I know both of you are used probably to, in your therapy work, with some eye contact and body language, and here all you're hearing is a voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just wondering what it would be like to do therapy over a phone. And maybe I should say to you, how is it? Yes.
Because I've learned to depend more on tonal quality, inflections, pauses, things like that. And because we don't have the other. I found a great advantage to the telephone. People often will be more open on the telephone than they are face to face. So I hope this will be an enjoyable experience for you two tonight. Mm-hmm. Let's carry on with another call here in just a moment. Karen, are you working? Sure, she's working. Okay, let's do a thing. And I'll pick up another call from the 762 Bank. After that, we'll be going to the South Bay.
Frontier Village Amusement Park in San Jose is now open every day. Frontier Village is the perfect one-day vacation where you can soar high in the sky on the Spirit of Kitty Hawk or spin crazily round and around and around on the Roundup ride. Paddle a canoe around Indian Island, hide your face in cotton candy, catch a trout, hot dog, or enjoy a ride on the Ferris wheel and merry-go-round. There are over 30 exciting rides and attractions. Why, there's everything to do from A to the petting zoo. Frontier Village in San Jose is a perfect one-day vacation. It's Northern California's favorite amusement park.
Frontier Village, the fastest fun in the West.
Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to midnight, Don Chamberlain After Dark. Dedicated to all who reason through love and love through reason. From the East and West Bay, dial 762-1591.
Oh, very well. This is that phone the light is still going out on. Let's see if we can catch it there. Hey, we have a couple of lines open under 762-1591. Hello there.
Hi, Don.
First name is?
Mary 47.
Okay, Mary 47. Can you talk closer to the mouthpiece?
Yeah.
Good.
I am definitely against the women's liberation.
Is that right?
I want no part of it.
Oh. What part particularly do you want no part of?
I don't want no part of it. I think the woman's place is in the home, raising the family, and her husband should be the head of the house.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's the way you were brought up to believe, of course. We've brought in, I've switched guests here. We have Jerry Ganley and Ron Singer on now. And I think both of them might have some questions for you. Either one or both. Ron?
Yeah, I was wondering what you thought about this idea of liberation for women or men.
I don't think anything about it. I don't like it.
How about men's liberation?
I think the man should be the head of the house and what he says should go.
But they have these groups that have men who want to be liberated. Does that make any sense?
Not to me, it don't.
Well, see, what happens, Mary, is we find that the men die off much earlier than the women do because they have been burdened with the total financial responsibility. Work hard, work hard. It used to be sun up to sun down. We've cut that down to 8 hours a day now. But the man is expected to achieve in a career and to earn a certain amount of money and be able to educate the kids and pay the rent or the mortgage and all the rest. And he works himself right into an early grave. And some men say, hey, you know, that's not for me. I want to live to be 85, too.
Okay, she could get out and help him. But still, he'd be the boss. She should turn the paycheck over to him.
Well, the boss...
But this
being the boss can be kind of rough, you know. Maybe some men don't want to be the boss.
I wouldn't want him.
Wouldn't you? You'd want a man to boss you?
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Your friends feel the same way?
Yeah, I guess so.
Your friends do feel the same way?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You're opposed to the liberation movement.
Definitely.
One of the things they've been talking about, let's say that, back in the old days, Mary, the secretaries in offices were all men. That's back in the previous century.
Yeah, 10-4.
Yeah, 10-4, right. I'm glad you understand radio talk. But men were secretaries, women were not. And women cracked the field. And now mostly women are secretaries and men are not. Now we're starting to change back again and starting to be a little more equal. But this idea of equal work opportunities, do you think a woman has the right to go into a job she is capable of doing, even though it has been occupied previously mostly by males.
Well, not man had the job first.
Well, the male secretary.
Reference.
The male secretary, Mary.
Well, I'm a female secretary.
No. Maybe you're not. I'm not making myself very clear. 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 75 years ago, whatever it was, most of the secretaries in offices were men.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, somehow, women broke through that barrier, see? And they got the secretarial jobs. Then it turned completely around, and it became almost a totally female secretary thing. Now, it's changing a little bit.
Yeah.
But if a woman is qualified to be, let's say, a doctor, which is basically has been traditionally a male field, should she be allowed to be a doctor?
Well, personally, I wouldn't go to a female doctor.
No, I'm not asking what kind of a doctor you'd prefer. We're talking about should a woman be permitted to go into a field that formerly has been traditionally male, a female, like a doctor?
No.
No, she should not?
No.
Oh. Is there a reason for that feeling?
Yeah, I think a man's superior to woman.
A man is superior to woman?
Right.
In what way is a man superior to woman?
In all ways.
Name some ways a man is superior to women.
I think man is more capable of handling things. They're sharper. They make better doctors, better lawyers, better judges. I think a man is just superior to a woman in all ways.
I can tell you one way.
The only way a man isn't superior to a woman is when it's come time to give childbirth.
No, he can't bear a child. I can tell you another way in which a woman is superior to a man.
How's that?
If you want to talk in terms of superiority and inferiority.
How's that?
A woman is much more capable of sexual enjoyment than a man is.
You really think so?
Oh, well, it's a fact. You can be a multiply orgasmic woman. A man is seldom multiply orgasmic. Are you following me?
Yeah, I follow that. Yeah.
Yeah. So a woman is capable of much more sexual enjoyment than a man is. And that is a fact. What do you think of that one?
You can have at least two, sometimes three orgasms.
Who can?
Yeah.
Who can?
I can.
Yeah, of course. Okay, you're multiply orgasmic.
Yeah.
Well, the same is not true of your husband.
No.
Yeah, right. So in that respect, that single respect, if you want to consider superiority, inferiority, you are superior to your husband.
Well, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Well, I sure wouldn't lord that over his head. I wouldn't want to hurt his feelings.
Yeah, right.
No way.
Yeah. He does have feelings.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay, Mary. Well, thank you for your opinion, dear.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Is there... Jerry, let's bring you in. We haven't talked with you yet. This is Jerry Gantley, and he's a psychiatric technician with the... Might as well mention the name again. North County Center for Better Living, Daly City. Well, I haven't said KNEW Oakland, San Francisco. I've said it now. Do you find that women in their, say, middle 40s, late 40s, 50s, tend to share Mary's feelings? And if so, is there a reason for that?
I guess I would generalize and say yes. And I think it's a very sad situation that women of that age have such a negative attitude towards women in general, and which I think is reflective of their attitude towards themselves. And I think it's really indicative of the educational system that teaches women to look down upon themselves and look up to men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it possible, swing Ron in now, is it possible, Ron, that women who have a certain position, they have a role, Mary has a role that she has fit into, and she has married and she's born children and they're probably raised and out of the home by now, and any thought that threatens that role is important to her.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get at what you're feeling behind that.
I feel as though to women like Mary, the women's liberation movement is threatening.
I think it is.
Yeah.
In a sense, I'm concerned about some of the feelings that we may be putting out by taking the case of Mary and using Mary, because I feel that society allows people to develop to a certain point, and if Mary's in a place through her whole life flow where this is where she sees things,
you would not upset that.
Well, I don't want us to cast her as sort of the baddie or the dummy, or whatever. That's where she is right now.
One of the great messages of the liberation movement is, whatever you decide is good for you, is fine.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to be in the suburban housewife role, the traditional role, and if you're comfortable with that, fine. But you do have the opportunity not to be in that role if you don't want to.
Yeah, my wish would be that society would have allowed Mary another kind of experience, so she'd be different, that's for me, because I think Mary would have gotten more out of some other feelings, other opinions that she has. She'd be in a different position than she is right now, where she has to sort of feel, wow, I could be superior to my husband, but I'll keep it to myself.
I don't want to hurt his feelings.
Right.
Okay, we'll pick up another call here in just a second. We'll be going to the South Bay next, the one who's dialed 295-KNW. All the lines are full with the exception of the one of the North Bay. So it seems to be open, but calls may be canceling each other out. The number there is 456-KNW.
It's heartburn and fullness. It's gas again.
Digel has told you acid indigestion and heartburn are often accompanied by gas. Now, a report from the U.S. government confirms that the only ingredients recognized effective against both acid indigestion and gas are an antacid combined with simethicone. That's exactly what Digel is. No antacid alone relieves like Digel does. Use only as directed. Digel relieves acid indigestion, relieves gas too.
All right, the one who's dialed 295-KNEW, the South Bay caller. If that person will come rushing back to the telephone, we'll put her or him on the air in just a very moment.
Before your children enter school, California Medical Association urges you to be sure they've had proper immunizations. Measles, polio, diphtheria, tetanus, and a tuberculin skin test. It's also advisable that children have a complete physical to determine if there are any problems which may interfere with learning.
This is Don Chamberlain After Dark. To call, dial from the South Bay, 295-KNEW. Said Galileo, "You cannot teach a man anything. You can only help him discover it within himself."
On we go with a fully lighted board, and now to the South Bay. Hello there.
Hi.
First name is?
Barry.
What is it?
Barry.
Barry?
Barry. B-A-R-R-Y.
Okay.
38 Stanford.
Oh.
I realize it's very in the Bay Area, and I'm not a native, I'm from the East, to believe in both homosexuality and women's liberation. And I believe I'm fair in saying that you over-believe in both of them. And I say over-believe because it seems to me that you've got to take a balanced view about them. There's some very good things about women's liberation, and there's some very good things about the homosexual liberation movement. But they are a mixed blessing. And what I wanted to do is possibly hear a discussion of some of the things that I consider relevant to them.
Well, first of all, when you say, how did you put it? How did you word it? Over what?
Pardon?
How did you refer to the liberation movement and homosexuality over what?
I say they're very mixed blessings.
No.
Take a balanced view.
Before you said before you said you are over approving. Was that the word you used?
I forget exactly the word I used, but I think you sort of think when somebody mentions women's liberation, it is a good, And when I think...
Over-acceptance?
When somebody mentions homosexuality, your general reaction on the radio tends to be, it is a good.
Ah,
what I'm trying to say is there are good and bad elements in both.
Well, Jerry just said it. He had the same word I had in my mind, but it's not the word you use. What we generally talk about is acceptance.
Acceptance.
Yeah.
Yes,
acceptance.
And I'm all for accepting homosexuality at an individual level.
All right.
When
okay.
it's thrust on the masses, as it is in the Bay Area, I become a little uptight about it.
In what fashion is it thrust on the masses?
Well, if you don't, it is very non-in, as I mentioned, in the Bay Area, to have reservations about the universal acceptance of homosexual behavior. And to say that it's, you know, that there's some variance in homosexuality between mother's nature, you know, mother nature and homosexuality is anathema. People look at you as if you were talking heresy. And it should be completely obvious to anybody, I would think, that homosexuality between consenting adults may be acceptable, but if it was everybody's way, civilization wouldn't last very long.
Jerry?
I
have some thoughts too, but yeah. I want to include you.
My response to that would be, as a native of San Francisco and seeing the growth, I wouldn't say it was an over-acceptance so much as an acceptance, because in a sense it's balancing the lack of acceptance throughout the United States of any deviation from the rule, what would be labeled as deviation from the rule.
Heterosexual missionary position.
Exactly.
Right.
No. What happens in the Bay Area, I think is probably one of the most unique areas in the entire world. You know, there is so much being done. Well, this show is one example.
And it's a great show.
Okay, thank you. But there's so much being done in the metaphysical field, in the psychiatric field, in the social acceptance field. And if you went back to Iowa and among the cornfields, why, you'd be ridden out of town on a rail to even discuss things like this. But I think what Jerry is trying to emphasize is that though we may have a proliferation of conversation and print information about homosexuality, liberation movement, or whatever it is, it does balance out with the nation and perhaps with the world.
Right. All I'm paying for, Don, I'm somewhat bold in saying this, I guess, but is that you were trying to balance out that poor fellow you were talking to earlier this evening. I think you need some balancing out about the negative aspects of women's lib and homosexuality, because I think you're blind to them, generally speaking.
Are you from Canada?
Yes.
Okay.
What gave that away?
I can't tell you, it's my... A boot. Yeah. I can accept what you're saying, and I don't feel badly about that. What do you consider to be the negative aspects of, let's say, we're primarily talking about liberation movements.
All right, let's talk about some of them.
All right.
You mentioned one last night.
The liberation movement, what are the negative aspects?
Well, here's one you mentioned last night yourself, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Women want the advantages of liberation, but they do not want the disadvantages.
I don't think I said
and
that.
The specific you mentioned is when a man comes up to a woman and makes that first move, he's carrying his pride in his hand.
Uh-huh.
And when he gets kicked in the teeth, it hurts.
Yeah.
A woman very rarely, even now here, I don't know what it's like in San Francisco, but I can tell you here at Stanford, not many of them make the first move.
Well, no, I don't consider that a negative aspect. I consider that if a woman is going to be a liberated person, she has as much right as a man to approach a man for a relationship, but she also has to take the risk, of course.
Right,
she's
going to... which they're not doing.
Oh, no.
I'm saying that they want all the goodies, but they don't want to take any of the hardships.
I don't know.
Traditionally been a role of the man.
Well, Ron?
Yeah, I was wondering if... we could do a little imaginary thing.
Right.
Imagine that there was woman's liberation and men's liberation, and this had all, in a sense, transpired already. And, you know, you and I were living in a society where there were, let's say, by random, just random chance, there was a quarter of us who were married and having children or not, another quarter who were homosexually living together as females, and a quarter living homosexually as males. You know, how would you feel about a society like that?
As long as homosexuality is confined to consenting adults, as far as I'm concerned, it is perfectly legitimate. Mm-hmm. But when I am discussing it with a bunch of people, and when I point out negative attitudes regarding some of it, which I certainly have, and I think every citizen that is not a homosexual has. And in fact, even homosexuals, I think, have reservations about it.
Well, some people who are heterosexual have some reservations about that, too. But
what feelings... All I'm saying is it's not totally good.
What feelings do you as a heterosexual have negatively about homosexuality?
What do I think negatively about it?
Yeah.
I don't think it's in accordance with the grand plan, and I'm not a religious man.
In accordance with the grand plan?
Right.
The grand plan being?
The grand plan being Mother Nature's plan.
Propagate?
Right.
But when we talk about...
If homosexuals were homosexuals, there'd be no crows next year.
Say that again?
If all crows were homosexual, there'd be no crows next year.
I see. Okay. But when we talk about sexuality, most of our sexuality is for pleasure, not procreation.
There's two reasons for it, Don. There's no question pleasure comes in there, but I think when you start saying that procreation isn't one of the reasons for the sex act, you're defying everything that happened since we evolved from unicellular aquatic organisms.
If it weren't fun, there wouldn't be many kids born.
Right. Yeah, I don't think you can discount the...
Barry, about people... Married people who choose not to have children.
Legit. Absolutely legit.
So their sexuality is solely for pleasure.
Right.
Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that's...
Business, and it's quite all right.
That's a heterosexual couple.
Right.
What about a homosexual couple that chooses not to have children?
It's their business. It's quite all right. I am not talking about the individual conditions regulating homosexuality.
I fail yet to see
the... This sort of a mass movement that everybody's got to buy homosexuality as a good, and all I'm saying is it's sure as hell not a universal good, whatever else it is.
I don't know that anybody is buying homosexuality or heterosexuality as good.
Oh, I think everybody buys heterosexuality as good for sure, don't they?
Not the homosexuals.
I do, anyway, but...
Yeah, well, that's for you.
And you do, too, I think.
Well, because I happen to be a heterosexual, but I think we're getting all caught up in semantics here, Barry.
Could be.
Yeah.
Straighten me out.
Please leap in, guess, whenever you want to. But it sounds to me as though you are, you're feeling that someone is pushing homosexuality onto people.
Definitely, and there's no question about that here at Stanford. I can't speak for California generally, but there's no question about it here. You're very square if you don't buy homosexuality lock, stock, and barrel without qualification.
You mean accept or become?
Oh, no, there's no pressure on you to become one.
Okay.
But there's pressure on you to accept them without reservation.
All right. Okay. And you have trouble doing that.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For reasons I've already mentioned.
George?
Yeah, I was wondering whether Barry, what fantasy you may have if we were all free to choose, absolutely free, whether you feel to choose our sexual object, whether you feel that, how do you think the people would choose? How would the world turn into?
I don't understand your question, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I mean, do you think that if people were free to choose, there would be a sort of a homosexual plague and everyone would convert into it, and therefore it would be a danger to humanity or so? This is my fantasy about what your fantasy may be.
Did you get it?
Not really.
Well, I'll paraphrase it. If everyone in the world, we do have a lot of restrictions, a lot of controls on our lives, of course. Social pressures, governmental pressures, restrictions, but if everyone was totally free to choose his or her sexuality,
yep.
Do you fear or do you fantasize that people would overwhelmingly choose homosexuality?
Oh, no way. But I'll tell you one thing I do fear. I have a feeling that the fractionalization, and here's why I brought this up, that is being caused by women's liberation, rather than, as you stressed earlier tonight, take a human liberation approach, is causing men, and I mean this, to seek homosexual relationships, because heterosexual relationships in this area are next to impossible. So that is how I relate women's liberation and homosexuality. I think women's liberation and the tremendous dissonance it is producing in the minds of both men and women is causing them to fractionalize and become almost exclusive sets. And the interface, which should be there, if you're taking a human liberation position in the problem, which is the only one that's going to work, because men need women, and women need men. And if you're talking about women's liberation, you've got to talk to the person that holds the bonds, as well as the person that's within them, it would seem. And this is one of the real problems. I don't think it's going to get anywhere, strictly because the next thing you'll see is a men's liberation movement, and the lines will be drawn, there'll be no man's land, and we'll be into the Second World War, except with more serious consequences, because it's going to, you know, destroy much of the things that we all believe in.
When I say something, it sounds like the world as pictured by Barry, the consequences of these liberation movements are very gloomy, you know, that they will be responsible for a enormous confusion, and it seems to me that it requires a reorientation and rethinking of our own role as a male or female.
Well, look at it this way, please. The man for millenniums has been the provider, okay? Millenniums.
Right.
The woman for millenniums has been the homemaker. And role playing now is a dirty word. My, roles are bad, roles are bad. But nonetheless, that is an historical fact for millenniums, thousands of years. Now, we are going to change that. Maybe it should be changed, by all means. But you're not going to change it overnight. A man was paid and is paid more than a woman for equal work.
Why?
That was just under the old system,
yeah.
Because a man was paid for him, for his wife, for his children, for his dependents, not for himself. Okay?
What do you do in a situation, I think you're coming along, Barry, what you do believe in the women's right to vote?
Definitely. Let's not be sarcastic about it.
Well, no, I'm not being sarcastic because at the time when the suffrage movement was on, there were marches in the streets and there were riots. So I'm not being flippant about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very crucial issue, and there was a time before that when the only people who could vote were those who owned land.
Well, as I say, you and I and everybody else is against that.
Okay, but these are the changes that have taken place.
Right.
As we look back on them now, we say they were proper changes.
Right.
Don't we?
The time when an African was brought to America as a slave, and
yeah.
We're all surely appalled by that.
All right, okay. So,
fact, but I can't see its relevancy to the present situation.
Well, you can't. Okay. You can see that the move to extend the vote right to those who didn't own land as proper, although it was cataclysmic at the time. You can see, looking back, that the suffrage movement for the right to women to vote was proper, though it created riots. Now, these are changes that, at the time, were much more severe than the changes we're talking about now. I don't think so,
because we're suffering major psychological... I'm not a behavioral scientist, and I haven't got the empirical data.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think most of the women in the liberation movement are lesbians?
Well, I was reading today, Our Bodies, Ourselves, is it?
Yeah.
And maybe that's not the case, that most women in... women's liberation are lesbians, but the converse is very definitely true. Most lesbians are women's liberationists.
Okay, what is...
Because everybody in that book that was describing their lesbianism admitted being a fanatical worker in the movement.
I don't blame them. Okay, not Jerry, this is Ron.
Barry, I was wondering where your feelings and ideas about women's liberation come from. What came to my mind was something called a dominance complex.
I have no reason to dominate a woman.
No, please don't get defensive.
Dominates me very much.
No, please don't get defensive.
No, I'm not directing it at you. It's a term used when a movement, a liberation movement, starts to say, it's not equality. We're better than you. And I'm wondering whether this is what you feel is going on with any liberation movement.
I think they're overdoing it completely, and they're causing a counter. There will be counter movements here in California, I'm absolutely certain. Because, the woman, looking at her historically, has ruled the roost in America anyway. She's decorated the home. She's done things pretty much according to her own taste. And there's not many guys that refuse to give the wife $100 if she says she needs it, or whatever the hell else she wants. Even if they're a little short on the things they want. Like, for instance, my wife has 10 times the wardrobe I have and has ordered other things, which I don't resent, because it's not the American way. The American man has been traditionally more generous than any other man on the face of the earth that I've seen with his wife. But yet it is the American woman that wants this mystical liberation. And I think they're making a mistake on a big count, too, where they're looking at greener pastures on the other side.
What do you think they want?
I think they're illusioned by the fact that we live in green pastures.
No, what do you think they want?
I think they want control of their own destiny, which is legitimate.
Well, if that is the message of the liberation movement as you see it, and you say that's legitimate, then you are in favor of the liberation movement.
Yes, I'm very much in favor of the objective that everybody choose their own destiny, which I know is one of your...
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, damn right.
Okay. I don't see what we're arguing.
Just that when it involves somebody else's bondage, you see, freedom involves responsibility as well as
being free.
And
how is a woman choosing...
Freedom involves somebody else's bondage.
Barry, how is a woman choosing her own destiny threatening to you?
No, not at all. If they'd maintain their own destiny, but when it becomes a rampant movement somewhere where they don't really know themselves where they want to go, it becomes threatening to everybody because it makes everybody feel that there's something wrong.
Okay. Thank you, Barry.
I don't want to beat this.
Well, no, it's mind-boggling because, you know, one of the things I've discovered is that in the old 10 to 2 show, when I was on in the daytime and I was talking mainly to women, they could really reveal their feelings.
Yeah.
And I find that men don't reveal their feelings quite as openly and easily as women do.
Oh, that's...
And I'm finding it extremely difficult to understand what you're saying. Extremely difficult. And I don't know if it's because I'm dumb.
Well, let me put it succinctly and then I'll conclude.
Okay.
There are good and there are bad aspects to women's liberation.
Well, we were trying to nail down the negative aspects in your mind.
I am trying to counterbalance your approach.
No, never mind about...
Liberation is good.
Never mind about my approach. Never mind about my feelings. Let's talk about your feelings.
Well, we've talked about them, I think.
But we haven't really... there are some feelings you have about the liberation movement.
Correct.
The scene that we get the feeling are threatening to you.
Definitely.
Are those feelings?
Male and female society.
What is it about the liberation movement that is threatening to you, Barry, as a 38-year-old man?
I think it makes women insecure of their roles.
No, about you. What your
secure
feelings?
Of my role.
No, what your feelings? Your feelings, not their feelings.
You're insecure, I've confessed.
No, not their feelings. You can't speak for them.
Okay,
you can only speak for yourself.
I see them every day in their coveralls here at Stanford.
You're talking about their feelings.
Sure.
I want to talk about your feelings.
Great. Well, I feel insecure.
You feel insecure. Okay.
And
now,
I don't feel ashamed about saying it.
Well, fine, no.
Man's feeling and every woman's feeling in California.
All right. Now we're getting down to it. Now, there's nothing wrong with your saying you feel insecure. No. we can take it from there. Your feeling of insecurity about the movement. Jerry?
I guess, Barry, I would really agree with you 5 years ago when the women's lib movement was heavily anti-male. We were the bad guy. We caused all the difficulty. I feel that it is...
San Francisco. I understand it's a light year ahead of this place.
Well, I feel that it's really mellowed out, and whereas I see the advent of men's liberation as a good thing, I hear you seeing it as a negative thing, and I think it's getting to the point, like Don says, people liberation,
right,
and realizing that all of us,
committed to it.
All of us are oppressed, whether we're male or female, and we're oppressed by the sexual roles put down in the society.
Buy that one?
If it comes to human liberation, I'll back it 100%.
Okay.
It's just as long as it comes in the front women's liberation, I think it is completely pretentious, because there are as many things to liberate about men's role. He's taking his damn lunch can every morning for, you know, and hustled off to work, and not all of us are in love with our work. I think that's evident in America. And he's stuck there every day till 5 o'clock. So he's had to sweat a lot of things, too. And if you're going to talk about liberation, let's liberate both sides, hopefully in dialogue between the two.
Very good. Okay, Gary. Barry, thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye. I think we ought to emphasize at this point, I can't think of a single movement of any sort that did not start out shaking up the country. That's the way movements begin. The civil rights movement. My golly, remember the first lunch counter sit-ins? Terrible. And I'm not going to ride in the back of the bus? Wow. Who ever heard of a thing like that? But it, too, has mellowed out, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that in order to overcome the inertia, people have to be feel very strongly about something to really originally push it through. Something that I, without pretending to speak for women, I know from the women with whom I work, and some of whom are listening, so they told me they would be listening. I know that they are very aware that there's a struggle within themselves about what Barry was talking about. Like they realize that, if I've heard correctly, that with the changes they want, there's a lot of giving up of things that they used to enjoy before, that you can't just have your cake and eat it too, that there's a certain changes that must occur. And it's difficult. It's very difficult, both for at this point for them and for us, to face those changes. But they seem to be coming, and they seem positive.
Well, it's certainly a fact that you, if you want something, you have to give something to get it.
Right.
That is just a pure fact of life, whether it's a car or liberation or whatever it is. You have to give something to get it.
Right.
That's part of the negotiation that goes on in life. Okay, we'll pick up some more calls here in just a moment. And our guests tonight are Jerry Ganley, Ron Singer, and George Werbin, and they're all from the North County Center for Better Living in Daly City. And by the way, let me lay their telephone number on you. You might want to jot it down. They have complete counseling service there. It's a county situation. And their telephone number, that means sliding fee scale, 873-1800, and their extensions are 271 and 272. We'll carry on some more tonight as we discuss the male reaction to the women's liberation movement after this.
In most American cities, when you want to rent a car, you can choose from 15 or 20 companies. You can rent from 3 or 4 names you know and pay their big high rates, or you can rent from somebody you've never heard of, pay low local rates, and take your chances on the kind of service you'll get. Now, we'd like to give you our name and tell you why we think we're the best choice you can make. We're EconoCar, the car renting service of Westinghouse. So we operate like a big company. In over 300 offices, EconoCar rents shiny, well-conditioned Fords just like Hertz. But because we don't have their expensive locations and fancy offices to pay for, we rent our cars for a lot less. And we'll tell you exactly how much less when you call us. Chances are our rates will be right down there with the local companies. So instead of calling those 15 or 20 companies, why not just call us and get big company treatment at local company rates? EconoCar, a nationwide service of Westinghouse.
That's right.
All right, our next call will be coming from the 762-1591 Bank as we continue our conversation here in just a moment about male reaction to the women's liberation movement. And there are no open lines, they're all full. Our next call will be coming again from 762-1591. And I have to apologize to Engineer Karen. Karen, I'm going to ask you to put yourself in the bag again of being the gopher for coffee. Okay? And I'll owe you one. How's that? Because you don't get something for nothing, right? Right on.
This is Don Chamberlain After Dark. To call, dial from the South Bay, 295-KNEW. Said Galileo, you cannot teach a man anything. You can only help him discover it within himself.
Here we go.
All right. This is what you said.
We're discussing over here. We're negotiating. Okay, well, some of you are... You have to leave at 10? You have to leave at 10. And Jerry and Ron, how about you two?
We'll see if we can stay on a bit longer.
Okay, good. We appreciate it greatly, because I think we can not only have a lot of fun, but accomplish a lot with the night show. Great deal. Hello there.
Hello, Don.
Yeah, your first name is?
Jim. Let's call it Jim.
All right, Jim. How old are you?
34, Jim.
Don. You're Jim.
All right. Don, tonight, your discussion, is that really kind of set on our Women's Liberation Front, or can we just deviate for a second?
Well, we'll see. Lay it on me, and we'll go.
Okay, we were talking earlier about feelings, especially between men and women, so forth, I guess, like you were saying.
I think that's part of it. Yeah, that's relevant.
Well, a woman's feelings are more genuine, not maybe more genuine, but very more easily to express than a man would.
Well, the feelings may be the same, but a woman traditionally has been permitted to express her feeling. That's femininity, see?
Okay, well, what is your opinion? I'd like to really know your opinion on expressing feelings between two people, for example, if it's possible to get into that.
Sure.
How much feeling should be expressed, and how much should you show of your own true feelings without stretching yourself out too far and being played a game with, or so to speak?
Are you talking about an ongoing relationship, a marriage situation?
Sort of a building affair sort of thing, but without any sexuality involved. Let's say you're a man who's fallen in love with a woman, or vice versa, and now you get to the point where feelings have to be expressed, and do you feel that holding back of these feelings is really the right way to go, or is it typically like... some women that I have met in the way of this women's liberation thing is that type of woman seems to enjoy pulling the feelings out of a man, stretching them all out, and just walking on top of them. It seems like you're kind of for grabs. You end up being number one fool, number one pitch. So instead of being a bird all your life, what's your opinion as far as expressing feelings between two?
Well, number one, I'm a great believer in revealing feelings naturally as a relationship develops. Feelings can be revealed more deeply, or the deeper feelings can be revealed.
Well, what about the scar tissue that develops after a period of time?
Here's what happens. I don't think two people can become very close unless they share their inner feelings. And when you do share your inner feelings, when you do reveal your sensitivities, you do reveal your guilt feelings, naturally you're taking some risks. You're taking the risk perhaps that the other person says, I buy the theory, I don't get involved with anybody who's got more problems than you have, therefore I don't want to be with you, Charlie.
Yeah, right.
So when you do reveal, you do run the risk that some people are going to reject you.
Okay, well then, if you've gathered this, say, in the past, if you've gathered this kind of feeling in the past, you can start conversations or generate thoughts or so forth like this just to try to get the person's response to what your feelings might be if you wanted to express them. In other words, put out a test sort of thing and see what the reaction is.
Sure, put out your antennae and see what happens.
Right. Okay, now if the reaction is positive, that lends you to believe that you can express your true feelings, right?
Well,
I think you can go further and really come straight out, right, with your feelings, your thoughts, or whatever.
Well, it's sort of like walking through a minefield, I suppose.
Yeah, really. But what I was wondering is that your opinion would be then to really expect this and not feel really hurt or stepped on or whatever if it should happen.
Well, we've got three who work in the mental health field, and they probably have some better knowledge than I have. But my basic feeling is that we all start out a relationship with our best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that best foot forward may not be the real person.
I see. Okay.
So
you kind of hold yourself over there, but then
this is generally what we do. We start out and we test the waters with our big toe. Mm-hmm. And we see just how safe the waters are. And then if the relationship is going to grow, then we start revealing more of ourselves and more of ourselves and more of ourselves. We might reach a point of where the other person rejects that, says, I don't want that one. Well, that's the chance we take. But otherwise, you're dealing with a plastic figure if you don't reveal.
That's true, but after a while...
Are you afraid of being rejected?
Well, in a way, in a sense, I am, because it's happened so many times, and now I'm putting up a big, fat defense against this sort of thing, and
then the woman is not dealing with the honest you, though, see? The real you.
No, I feel I can't. If I do deal with an honest me, it's going to be... It started out, the relationship would go on for, say, 2 or 3, 4 months, and it would be, it'd get kind of heavy, maybe even less than that, let's say 2 months, 3 months, something like this.
Yeah.
And it gets really heavy, no sex act yet or anything like this, because there's really a true love feeling,
mm-hmm.
and that really hasn't entered it yet. It becomes sort of a real, super genuine sort of thing.
Well, we've got a number of things to talk about. Okay, let's, George, want to leap in here and talk about revealing?
Again...
This is a good message for women, because women don't often hear men talking about their fear of rejection.
Right. I agree. I think that, again, I don't want to generalize. I think the important thing is to know what I'm feeling. And then maybe I have more of a choice whether I reveal such feelings or not. But I would like to know what it is that I'm feeling. And as you were saying earlier, it depends on the trust.
Well, this is it. See, I can, after I got to know this girl quite well, or this woman quite well, I gave more and more of my feelings, and I felt now I've really found someone I can talk with. I really can express things and talk about things, mm-hmm. and response is genuine, the response is very intelligent and so forth. It's not, there's no silly responses. It doesn't go over the top of her head. She's hearing all this now.
How did you feel? How does that feel?
Oh, I felt elated. I felt so elated that I felt I missed this all my life. I missed this for 34 years. I never had this before. Even though I'm married now, this was with another woman, and I don't find that in my marriage at all. And this is why the marriage is going on the rocks, for example, is the basic reason for it. But with this other woman, I felt this, and it was so super genuine. But now the situation comes up where she feels I put out maybe a bunch of myself, and now she's kind of playing a game with it, and it becomes a sort of a sardonic response. And
how is she playing the game with it? How is she playing the game with it?
Well, I can express it now, express some thoughts right now, and she'll laugh about herself like this, knowing in a sense that hey, she's got a hold of me, you know. And
is she revealing also?
No, very little.
Oh.
Very little. Not as much as I am.
Ah.
It's sort of a, let's put a percentage. Let's say 70-30, 80-20, something like that.
Okay.
But
Hold on a second, because this is an important point.
Well, I feel that it's risky. I don't think there's a guarantee that by sharing feelings we are not going to be rejected. There's no guarantee. I think it feels so good that when we are understood that I think it's worth it. But if we are very afraid not to risk it, and then we are going to cover ourselves and not show our feelings, then we are going also to lose this wonderful experience of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And
But one of the problems here in Jim's case is that they're not really sharing. He's revealing, but she's not revealing.
Well, not to the same percentages, you see, but this is what makes you, it kind of really bears inside you as a scar tissue, saying, never, there's no way in H-E-L-L that I'll ever with me again if we're talking about tons of feeling.
Okay, there's a way to do this. We'll teach it to you. Jerry?
What I really hear strongly, Jim, in your initial statement was you have a definite expectation of how a relationship will go ahead of the relationship itself. And so what I hear is that no matter how it does go, your basic expectation is still there. And that's what you've got to deal with before any relationship will be different than that.
This business of sharing, you see, if you're revealing 90% and she's revealing 10%, that's hardly sharing.
That's true, but then...
Okay, but there's a way to overcome that, or a way to deal with that, if you two are willing to do it. Mm-hmm. And that is the old trading weapons game.
How's that, Don?
Well, the trading weapons. You're familiar with trading weapons? Jim, you and I care for each other, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're developing a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to reveal to you that I sometimes feel guilty that I haven't been as good a father to my four daughters as I should have been or could have been.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's one of my guilt feelings.
Okay.
What's one of yours?
One of my guilt feelings?
Yeah.
Well, having gotten married, for example, when I really didn't have the love and feeling that I really feel now at this late an age. I'm starting out at 34.
Okay, so you feel guilty that you got married, not really wanting to get married?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
That's the biggest guilt feeling I have.
All right, okay. Now, you and I have just traded guilt feelings, right?
Okay.
No, we've only traded one guilt feeling, that's all.
Exactly, right.
All right. Now, I care for you, Jim, and you care for me. You're not going to nail me about my guilt feeling about not having been perhaps as good a father as I could have been to my daughters years ago.
Oh, of course not.
All right, because you like me.
Sure.
You care for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and you don't want to hurt me, right?
Sure, right, exactly.
All right. I'm not going to nail you on your guilt feeling about getting married when you didn't really want to get married. Listen to me now.
Okay.
So the point is that we've traded weapons.
Okay.
Now, we've revealed ourselves to each other, haven't we?
We sure have, right.
Okay. Now, I mean, we've only done it one time, just one little revelation.
Okay.
Now, we're going to put those...
It depends, again, on the power of the revelation, doesn't it?
Well, sure, yeah. And if you find that the other person is not really revealing, well, you knock it off. The game is over. But if you really are trading weapons, if you really do care about each other, you are trading weapons, you put those weapons on the shelves. Now, if I do refer to your getting married when you didn't want to get married, it's accidental, because I really don't want to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say anything to nail you, see? So we're trading weapons. We'll never use those weapons. If they are used, it's accidental.
Right.
And you say, ouch.
Right.
Okay? So when you're with a person and they're not really sharing, and you're just pouring your guts out to the other person.
Well, how do I know, for example, if the other person has the intensity of their feelings or their reservations or whatever is equal to mine? I mean, it might be equal to mine, but I have no way of knowing the power of the revelation. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Something I might say to them might be...
In other words, she might have had an abortion that she's not telling you about, and therefore she's not revealing as much as...
When I went to bed with my husband, for example, I thought of you, you know, and that might have been a super revelation. I thought that she was getting me, but maybe it wasn't anything as deep as what she could. You know, I have no way of knowing the intensities. You know, I don't know if I'm giving out dollars and she's giving out pennies or whatever.
Yeah, I understand. Okay.
It sounds like there's a very high premium on communication and sharing, maybe to the point that things get ahead of themselves with you. And I wonder if this imbalance has anything to do with that, where you're sharing 90 and they're sharing 10.
Well, that's quite possible, because the reason I'm saying that is because this is the first time that I can say in my own self that I felt, years in the Navy and so forth like this is sort of a lust thing you grow into yourself with, and if you live that kind of a life where it's a sex thing and, it's no big relationship. too far. But once I've known this feeling of love, I want to just spill out. I want to spill out. I don't want to let go. You know, it's the last rope off the ship. I just don't want to let go of it, you know.
Yeah, and you're afraid that if you reveal too much, you'll lose her?
Pardon?
Are you afraid if you reveal too much, you'll lose her?
Well, I figure that I have right now. I've revealed so much, and now the responses are sardonic in a way, and
okay.
The responses aren't there anymore. It's sort of it's happened that way before, but not in a love sort of thing, in a trust way.
Jim, we're going to go on to another call at the moment.
Okay.
Any of you men have something you want to say to this?
I just wondered, Jim, where, you know, the actual sex act fits in this for you.
How does it fit in for me?
Yeah,
in the whole process.
To me, it would be, which it never has been before, I enjoy it, of course, but the thing is... In this relationship, if the sex act would ever come into it, I'd say it'd be utopia, I think.
Have you been trying to get her?
Oh, it'd be a multiple orgasm sort of thing. I think it'd be just.
Have you been trying to get her to bed, Jim?
Pardon?
Have you been trying to get her to bed?
No, I haven't brought it up for fear that.
You'd be rejected.
That it might endanger something, or she might think that it's an all sex thing. And I don't want to get that in her mind. I want her to understand that it's really a serious feeling, a strong feeling, a very sincere feeling. And it's not that I'm just out there to hit the rack with her. You know, I have to get that out. I wanted to make sure to get that out of her head.
Mm-hmm. Well, in 2 months' time, I suppose you've gotten that out of her head.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess. I really don't know. I don't know when to stop, when to start. That's why I was...
Okay, we're going to, since our topic is women's liberation movement, we're talking about people liberation, though.
Uh-huh.
And so I think this whole thing of communication and revealing and sharing does tie in. Traditionally, women have been the ones who could safely reveal their emotions. Women could cry, men could not cry. That's changing.
Is that a woman's love sort of thing now that if to pull a guy's feelings along, is that a sort of a thing that we can expect? I mean, is that one of the outcroppings of the women's organization?
Well, I have some feelings about it, but my feeling is that probably the women in the movement, to whatever degree they're in the movement, want men to be open and honest with them.
It'd be interesting to really sincerely meet someone like that it doesn't in time make a pigeon, you know, or a fool out of you, really, because you feel kind of foolish, and I'm just beginning to wonder on this topic of women's liberation whether it's this sort of thing is
you take risks when you reveal. Now, you see, if you don't want to fail, you do nothing. You can be agoraphobic. You can just sit in your house and not go outside the door. You won't fail because you're doing nothing.
Okay, but then in the relationship afterwards.
No, but wait a second now. If you want to succeed, you have to risk failure. Do you know anybody who succeeded who hasn't had some failures along the line?
No, I really can't say that. No,
yeah.
That's true.
So in relationships and in revealing.
Same boat, right?
Yeah, you have to take the risk.
Okay, that requires for every relationship that you start or whatever, you go through the same risks again and again. That's
certainly.
Just,
if you want it to be a close relationship, be very superficial. A lot of people lead superficial relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Marriages go on for 20 years and they say, we never had a fight.
No, I could never, that could never happen with me. I couldn't hang in there that long. I can't even hang in there with my marriage that long because there's no communications and there's no talk, there's no feeling. I can spell out feelings and all the answers I get is, really, you know, and that sort of thing. So if they're not heard, they're not understood, and gets to a point, you know, where you go out and you...
George, let's bring you in on this thing of the risk you take in revealing and how important it is if you want to be a... have a fulfilled relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the way, Jim, you do sound very hurt. And are you?
Am I hurt?
Yes.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I feel like I'm growing, like I was telling Don, I feel like I'm growing a scar tissue inside of me that says, be just standoffish from now till doomsday, because there's no sense in going through this again and again and again. I'm very apprehensive now, super apprehensive to ever revealing an ounce of myself. You know, I'd rather, you get the feeling you want to fight back, you know,
But one question is, and it seems like for a while that relationship was very enjoyable.
I'm sorry, I can't understand.
For quite some time, while you were sharing your feelings with this woman, you seem to have enjoyed it very much.
Oh, during the time, during the time when I did meet this girl, or when I the first couple months and so forth, there were times I just couldn't get off my mind. You're taking deep breaths. I'd be ventilating during the day. It was just unreal. Sure, it was just beautiful, just fantastic. Well, I enjoyed that, tremendously. But
well, you know, I don't know. I don't think we can possibly know why your relationship really didn't work out. But it may be for reasons that are not clear to us at this point. But if you had to do it all over again, would you have missed those couple of months of really sharing and really wonderful relationship?
I mean, would I have reservations in the future?
Yes. If you had to do it over again, would you miss that wonderful time you've had? I know you're hurting right now, but would you have acted differently?
In other words, what George is saying is, you have had, the relationship lasted 2 months?
Yes.
You had 2 months of absolute high peak elation.
Right, exactly.
Why, no, I won't use the word why. Can you picture that as a treasure in your mind?
Oh, definitely I can consider it a treasure, but a lost treasure. It's just like finding, like I told her, it's like finding a diamond. Like, let's say you found a diamond that was a foot in diameter. I don't know how many thousand carats that would be, but okay, let's say you found a diamond a foot in diameter, and someone said, hey, drop it and find something bigger.
But you had the diamond for a time.
Well, no, you had it in your hand, and now you say, okay, drop it and go look for something bigger. Now, no matter what, your mind's going to drop this stupid thing. You're going to find some way of hanging out to it until you find something bigger. But if you say, okay, it's got a head now, and look for something bigger and better, hey, something's got to snap inside and say, hey, I keep thinking about that diamond back there.
Well, there are different sizes of diamonds, and you had a foot-sized diamond in your hand for 2 months.
Well, the diamond I had in my hand for 2 months was priceless. I mean, I can't put a size on it. It was something that's never happened to me before in my life, Don.
Okay. I would venture to say, Jim, that not knowing details about what went on, that most probably it was not because of the sharing that the relationship did not turn out. There must have been other things. I think it would be a mistake to deprive yourself from that pleasure in the future by just becoming a hermit, you know.
Yeah.
And,
what you're saying is to allow this experience to be a treasure inside of me, to have known that I've experienced it.
You didn't lose by sharing.
I didn't lose by sharing.
No.
Okay, well, see, that's a point. That's a good point you made there. I'm very glad you brought that up.
You had elation by sharing, didn't you? You had extreme elation by sharing.
All right, I felt like I lost a lot by sharing, because now the feelings are sort of pulled out of me.
But in fact, no relationship lasts forever, even if it ends in death.
That's true.
All right? So, you did have a beautiful relationship that put you right up, you were right up against the ceiling for 2 solid months.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many people achieve that, and it's quite a treasure.
I guess I should look at it that way.
I also think that at this point it is okay to feel hurt.
Sure.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Perfect.
When something dies, when a part of us, a member of our family dies, we feel as though a part of us is lost, we grieve. When a relationship dies, we grieve.
Right.
That's all right. It's a very natural process. It'd be quite unnatural if you didn't feel some grief. All right?
Exactly, Don. Well, hey, thank you very much. You kind of give me an inspiration.
All right.
And I love your show, and I love what you did to me tonight as far as, you know, explaining that I should sort of hang in there if any other relationship starts again.
Remember what George said. George said most probably the relationship did not end because you shared.
Oh, see, I was having trouble understanding George, because you're very sharp and clear with the phone, and the other people are sort of muffled.
Well, that's because I just work closer to the microphone. But George made the point that most probably the relationship did not end because you shared.
I see.
All right? Okay. And that sharing made you feel a great sense of elation.
Right, exactly.
So therefore, by extension, sharing in the future might very well bring you a great peace, contentment, closeness. So you should not, because of this relationship ending, feel that in the future you cannot share.
Okay.
All right.
Don, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate talking to all of you, really.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
George, I want to say good night to you. You're leaving, huh?
Right.
What, you got a heavy date or something?
Yeah. That's a secret.
That's a secret, okay. George, I want to thank you very much for coming in. George Wirvin. And, however, Jerry and Ron are hanging in there for a little bit. How long you signal when you have to go, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
That's fair.
We're talking about male reaction to the women's liberation movement. And it's time to remind you, you're in tune with KNEW Oakland, San Francisco. A little late on that one. All right, listen, when I want to get away, I either hire myself to the Monterey Peninsula, Monterey area, or to South Shore Lake Tahoe, where I can visit my money. A place very close to the action, where my money is Pacifica Lodge, just on the California side, in South Shore Lake Tahoe. I want you to try the sexy suite with waterbeds. Oh, my, they have good waterbeds there. And fireplaces and wet bars, just everything. And with Sunday through Thursday reservations, you also got a complimentary dinner for two. Now, you can call Pacifica Lodge toll-free. Their number is 800-648-3333. That's 800-648-3333. You can make reservations now. And remember, all you have to do is say, "Hey, Uncle Don sent me," and they give you a discount. Well, save a little bread wherever you can. Pacifica Lodge, South Shore Lake Tahoe, their toll-free number, 800-648-3333. Our next call will be coming from the 762-1591 bank. And though we've had a number of calls from men, we're taking calls from women as well tonight. But we're taking all the calls at random, so we don't know who's going to pop up next. We'll see in just a moment from the 762 number.
Life is like an onion. You peel off one layer at a time, and sometimes you weep. Carl Sandburg. Don Chamberlain After Dark. For women, for men, for all.
For everybody, right. All right, Jerry and Ron are still with us. Jerry Ganley and Ron Singer. And hello there, dear.
Hi.
First name is?
Jade.
What is it?
It's Jade.
Jade. Oh, Jade, yeah.
28.
Right. All right, Jade.
Okay, there's one thing about the movement that has bothered me. It's been kind of nagging at my mind. And I have a lot of friends that are really involved in it.
Uh-huh.
And there seems to be an awful lot of criticism from them towards anybody that isn't involved in it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this is just me, feeling this way, or if other people felt this way about it.
Yeah, it seems as though they're laying a heavy trip on you because you're not involved?
You know, that any woman that isn't is either a prisoner in the home or hasn't got her head on straight.
Okay, yeah, well, we can talk about that, sure.
And it bothers me to the point where I think, well, if this is a liberation thing, we should be allowed to, go our own ways.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, have you run into it at all?
Sure, yeah, no, I know what you're talking about, certainly. Ron?
Jade, I'm wondering what these people feel you should be doing instead of what you are doing.
Well, I don't know. I can give you an example. The other night I had some friends over that are really into the movement. And we were all rapping, and I was ironing the shirt, And one of the girls made a comment, well, did the warden ask to have a shirt ironed? And I laughed it off, but they kept it up with other little things, because I am at home right now. I have a small child. And finally I said, I'm probably the only one I know of that if a shirt is hanging there ironed, I get a thank you, and if it isn't, he drags out the iron board and irons it himself, And they just said, well, you're a prisoner as long as you're in the home and taking care of a child. And to me, this, like I told them, I said, well, I'm here because I chose to be here. I have a college degree, I can go out and work, but I don't choose that right now, so this is my right. And they didn't agree with this. They said, I'm here because he wants me here. This type of thing.
I guess I'm concerned at why they have such a strong effect on you.
I don't know. It aggravates me because I feel that they are so much for, liberation. but they aren't letting the other people that aren't agreeing with exactly what they, you know, feel the end of the movement this much. They aren't allowing them to have the freedom of their life either without hassling them. And their whole point to me is getting away from the hassle that they've, you know, lived through. I agree with what they're saying and what they're doing.
Well, I think what Ron is kind of leading you around to thinking about is something doesn't happen to you unless you permit it to happen.
Well, it's not bothering me as an individual. It's bothering me as they are doing in turn the same thing that they're screaming about, and I don't understand this.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not taking it as a personal insult, because I know where my head's at.
Well, you know, it's almost like, I guess we could compare this movement to the Civil Rights Movement. When the Civil Rights Movement first really got off the ground, and the liberals were doing their good thing and joining the Civil Rights Movement, why, if you didn't have X number of blacks as very close friends whom you invited to dinner, why, you weren't really doing your thing, see?
Yeah.
And that's settled down now. We don't, you can have a black friend or whatever color friend.
Yeah.
It doesn't, and the people in the Civil Rights Movement, as we remarked earlier, have kind of mellowed. And I think in any movement, people who are deeply involved in it are rather vociferous about their statements. You know, they're really strengthening their own views.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the ways of doing it.
Well, I can understand that, and I can understand wanting to get others involved in it. What I guess I don't understand is a direct criticism rather than encouraging or showing their point of view. I guess that's what really bothered me. You know, direct criticism of, well, you are this way, or you're doing this because, rather than look at what we have, are you interested?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it bothered me.
It bothered you?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you respond to it?
Well, first I just listened, you know, and then when it kept up, with the example they were using, like I said, was ironing a shirt. And I said, well, I'm ironing this because I want to. And I'm probably one of the few women that get a thank you if there's an iron shirt in the closet. And if it isn't there, he goes and gets the iron board and does it himself. So I just feel that I'm...
It sounds pretty fair.
Pardon?
It sounds pretty fair to me.
Yeah, you know, I feel that this, for me, my lifestyle is great. But at the same time, I feel if they want people involved, they shouldn't directly criticize people.
Yeah, well, maybe this is just the... when any movement starts out, why, there's a lot of pretty strong stuff being laid on people.
Okay, well, I just kind of wondered if other people would run into it.
Jerry, you and Ron share that feeling? Or are you hearing something else?
I hear, and I certainly hope that people who are into the liberation movement hear what you're saying, because it is criticism of people who don't belong for whatever reason, whether they don't understand it or don't believe, that drives more people away than brings any sense of support. And I would imagine it's because... well, they may be uncomfortable with your situation,
mm-hmm.
and they criticize you for it because they don't understand where you're at, and they don't realize that they're, you know, driving you away from giving them any support.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, the women who did land on you like a sack of rocks because you were ironing a shirt,
right,
were putting themselves in your position and saying that if they were in your position, they would not iron the shirt.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay, they don't have to iron a shirt if they don't want to.
No, that's what I was saying. I didn't have to either.
Yeah.
I don't feel like ironing it. I wasn't ironing it.
But I think we have to be a little careful about allowing ourselves to be put in a defensive position.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to defend.
No, I wasn't.
Shirt.
I just wanted, you know, to me it seems a bad way to approach people.
Yeah, I agree with you that it doesn't do anything for the movement.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for your time.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, my. This is a delightful time tonight. Are you enjoying this?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is this the first time you men have been on the air?
That's right.
Really?
Yeah.
You sound like old pros. We'll have another call coming up. We're going to go to the North Bay in just a moment. Oh, yeah. Listen, there certainly is nothing wrong with sexuality, and there certainly is nothing wrong with things that enhance sexuality. And one of the things that will enhance the sexuality between you two is making love body lotion, because it has a secret ingredient that makes it, well, rather warm and tingly, as the body's warmth makes it come alive. Making love body lotion. Now, they have making love body lotion for women. A lot of women use it instead of perfume or cologne. They have making love aftershave lotion for men. And they have bath powder, making love bath powder, which is organic, by the way. All the making love products are just fine. But particularly, making love body lotion. It's different, exciting, and you can smooth it on whenever you want to feel more sensuous. On your body. All over your body. Making love body lotion. It's available at leading drug and department stores, including Payless Drug Stores, Montgomery Ward, Mervyn's, and all J.C. Penney stores. Making love body lotion. Your favorite store doesn't have it. Tell them to get it very soon, will you? I've got a little thing here I want to remind you about. Let's see. Oh, yeah, we might as well put in a plug for the North County Center for Better Living in Daly City right now. I understand you have some women there who are doing some pre-orgasmic women's groups. All right?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Okay. just started?
Well, there's work that's been going on, and there's going to be some affiliation with UC San Francisco coming over to the Center for Better Living and
sounds
doing
like
a cooperative venture.
Sounds like Lana Garfield's involved, is she?
Probably.
Yeah, because she and Theo Lowry and a couple of others were in the forefront of organizing, taking the M&J techniques and really refining them. Now, that's another unique thing about the Bay Area. The M&J technique, couples therapy, dealing with pre-orgasmic things, was not all that successful. It's basically because it was a matter that the woman wasn't in touch with her own body. And so some of the women in the Bay Area said, hey, you know, we can use some of these, some of the same information and transform it to a woman's group for women only who are primary pre-orgasmics, have never had an orgasm, and show them how to get in touch with their own bodies. And that really is a woman-to-woman thing and not a man-to-woman thing. Another mark, another star for the Bay Area, because the pre-orgasmic women's group started here. Jared?
I think one of the really neat things about the pre-orgasmic groups and the way it works is part of the process is encouraging the woman to not only develop her own sensuality and a contact with herself, but share this information with her mate.
Right, yeah. Yeah, then if she doesn't, why then she's a secondary. Yeah, then it becomes a matter of communication, of course. Okay, so much for that, and we'll have a little mood setter, and I'll take a call from the North Bay while you're hearing this.
A child speaks. If you touch me soft and gentle, if you look at me and smile at me, if you listen to me talk sometimes before you talk, I will grow, really grow. You're with Don Chamberlain, After Dark.
And we're having a good time tonight with our guests still remaining, Jerry Ganley and Ron Singer. Hi there.
Oh, hi.
First name is?
My name is Lucille.
Lucille.
Yes.
And your age, Lucille?
I'm 47.
Okay.
This whole evening has been very exciting listening to it. I hardly know where to begin.
Oh, the top is a good place.
Well, the thing that I was very interested in relation to myself is the male's reaction to the women's liberation movement, and really, in a sense, my own, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectually, I think both my husband and myself are really poor, and yet there's some gut-level feelings that don't really quite coincide.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to hear Barry's feelings, and I think Mary before, and then this last woman. And it seemed to me like where I related with them, it was, there was, with all of them, it seemed like there is this sort of feeling of, being threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to really work that out.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel threatened?
For instance, I think, I would say it was about over 7 years ago when I finally realized that just staying in the home was not enough. And it didn't have anything to do with not loving my my husband or not caring for my home life, but wanting something more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took some courses, and the only thing really open was to get out of the house, meet new people,
mm-hmm.
and get a job, which I did.
What was your husband's reaction to that action?
Oh, he said I could do anything I wanted. And yet,
what if he said you couldn't?
I don't know, because it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, but this does happen in some relationships.
Yes, I guess it does.
Man says, no, you can't. Your place is in the home.
Oh, well, you know, that's kind of interesting, because I fight for so many things, and yet, well, all right, sometimes I feel so very high, and and sort of a euphoric feeling, and gee, things are going so great. That's why that gentleman, when he was talking about his relationship with his woman friend, and revealing his feelings and what a wonderful feeling it was and what have you. And then feeling it was not given back to him and losing the relationship, what a downer it was. And it's in those low moments you think that I have thought sometimes to myself, you fool, why did you leave yourself so vulnerable so that you could be hurt so drastically, and then for some dumb reason, and really in a sense I guess it isn't dumb, I go through the same thing all over again. So it's kind of a repeated thing over and over again. This lovely high and then the crash. And,
are you talking about, with your husband?
Well, I'm talking about my husband relationship, and, I did have an outside relationship, and, it was kind of neat, and I cut it off when my husband found out about it, because I certainly didn't want to destroy what I had at home either, but I just got something outside of the marriage relationship that I wasn't getting at home, which was being able to share a feeling. That's why I felt in such a...
Was it a sexual relationship?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a strange one, because in essence, he was really impotent.
He what?
He was impotent. But there was sex involved, yes. But he really was, he was just giving of himself.
Yeah.
That was kind of a strange relationship, I have to admit that. If you're talking about a purely sexual relationship, and yet there was certainly very high sexual overtones.
What would have happened if, obviously the sexual part of the relationship was very threatening to your marriage, what would have happened if you had simply had a close friendship with this person without may have been sexual overtones, but without the sexual activity? Would that have been threatening to your marriage?
No.
It would not have been.
No, I don't think so. No, no, it wouldn't. any type of relationship that way has never been a threatening to my marriage.
Yeah. Sometimes we expect to find all things in one person, one relationship.
Yeah, I'm finding that out, and I realize that, and in some sense, it's kind of sad. Maybe I expect too much out of my marriage, and then I thought, well, okay, then I did seek elsewhere, you know, and of course, many times it happens that if you do have a fairly deep relationship, many times ends up in the feathers, as I've heard you say.
Yeah.
It seems only a natural part.
Uh-huh.
But, I don't know. Right now I'm going I'm on my way up from coming out of very much of a depression. Because of my husband finding out, and I felt guilty about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very curious. It was really very curious to me because I didn't feel guilt until I just found out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I really didn't quite understand.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was mainly because then I thought, you do have something, and I didn't want anything threatened here. And I guess it really wasn't because we're still together. And I don't quite understand that.
Yeah, you didn't feel guilty until you were found out, huh?
No, and that's something that I don't understand. I really don't.
Yeah. Jerry, Ron, you want to explore this a little? Some people can find it very useful to open up their marriage to the degree of either person having an outside relationship to whatever extent that is not threatening to the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? And sometimes people come to agreement of it's all right. It's kind of ludicrous in a way to say that just because we are together as a couple, our only friends will be couples,
right,
not individuals. You all of a sudden have to give up your male friends. He has to all of a sudden give up his female friends,
mm-hmm,
even the non-sexual ones. Huh?
Right.
And some people find it very useful, very fulfilling, to go ahead and have outside friendships to whatever degree is compatible to the marriage relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they find that very fulfilling. I'm wondering, what part of that outside relationship was the most fulfilling to you?
Oh, I think the being able to feel free in communication.
In communication?
Mm-hmm.
That was more important than the sexual part?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was to me, and it was to him too. I mean, we both had said that. I was thinking. I was just curious why I did go, but no, I was looking for it.
You what?
I really was seeking to find someone to be able to just give out that would be non-judgmental and
mm-hmm,
and not feel threatened by my feelings and my open feelings and to have that returned. I think it's kind of neat.
Yeah. How about your relationship with your husband? Communication isn't very good there?
Well, it's kind of off and on. He I don't know. I've often thought that I think I have to tread rather lightly when it comes to his ego.
Oh, let's talk about the male ego.
What?
Let's talk about the male ego.
Talk about the male ego?
Sure. Jerry, Ron, do you think there is such a thing as a male ego as compared to a female ego or a person ego?
No, I think there are egos of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a male ego does exist in a sense of being able to talk about it at this particular stage that we're in, where men have grown up a certain way to feel certain things about being a male that makes them very different from being a female. I'm wondering what it is for you.
What, my feelings about a male ego?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, when you really pin me down to that, maybe I call it the male ego, but in essence, maybe it's really just ego per se, because I'm thinking that I like to be praised, and I know he does. Please don't step on my toes. I'm thinking about, I'm putting words in his mouth, what I'm feeling that he's thinking, how I feel him come across to me. Certain things that I cannot feel that I can't be
open with him about?
Yeah, open about, because it's threatening, and that I call a female ego.
Yeah. Might it be that you are afraid of his reaction rather than this thing of damaging his ego?
Hey, you know. Yeah, I am afraid of his reaction.
What is it you'd like to tell him that you can't tell him?
Oh boy. I don't know if I right off the top of my head right now, maybe I feel like I'm sort of up against the wall. I don't know.
Well, for example, we all have fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
We all have sexual fantasies.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We can't.
Can't talk about those?
No, because there's not a sharing.
Not a sharing.
So about mine, if I don't get any back, and he once said, "No, I said, let's do that.
Hmm?
It's fun. Let's share this type of fantasy."
Well, no, I'm talking about the fantasy that does not go to reality.
Yeah.
All right.
And he doesn't like to participate in that type of thing.
Pardon?
He wouldn't participate in that. He doesn't like to.
In talking about fantasies?
No, sir.
For example, you might, this is just off the wall. Let's suppose that you had a fantasy about a wild weekend with Paul Newman.
Yeah.
All right.
Would that be
a dangerous area for you to discuss with him?
No, it would not be dangerous for me, but he doesn't like to hear about it.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I'll just go ahead anyway. But
does he share any of his fantasies at all with you?
No, not unless they're very intellectualized.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like there might be some kind of feeling toll booths in here. In other words, there has to be something given at certain points to allow communication to open up between you and your husband, and I'm wondering if there are things you know about that sort of open things up between the two of you.
How do you mean?
Well, there are things that he, for instance, wants to see perhaps from you. That allows him to feel okay about himself so that he can be open with you.
Oh, yeah.
Or, to be a little more concrete about it, maybe something like, he expects a peck on the cheek when he gets home.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, you know, where he feels that, the toll has been paid He pecks you back, his toll is paid, and now you can really be a little freer with each other, and that it extends into even deeper levels where there's bigger tolls to be paid to get into a deeper level of communication and feeling with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I see what you mean, and I think you're right. And
have you and your husband, you've been married how long now?
26 years.
Oh, you've got a lot invested.
Yes.
You want to keep the relationship?
Yes.
Okay. Does he want to keep the relationship?
I think so, and that's what I'd like to. That's what I'd like to hear. I'd like to.
Have you ever asked him?
Now I'm really getting to what I really want to talk about.
Okay.
I'd like to hear him say, I love you.
Uh-huh. A lot of ways to say I love you.
Pardon?
There are lots of ways to say I love you.
Yes, and then why is it so important to me?
Oh, well, because it's reassurance, of course, but...
I'd really like to hear it with my ears.
Yeah, you'd like to hear it with your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Does your
husband tend to be, does he tend to find it difficult to talk about his feelings?
He doesn't particularly care to know.
He doesn't care to reveal his feelings?
No, uh-uh.
Uh-huh.
And we did that go to counseling to learn how to fight.
Uh-huh. How many sessions in counseling did you have?
Well, that was a few years ago, about 7 years ago, quite a few sessions.
Yeah.
It was mainly to go because of me, because I was in acute depression.
Well, generally when you go for counseling, the relationship is being treated.
Yes.
All right.
But the thing is...
Did it help any?
It helped me tremendously, but I do find that that periodically I will get in a very acute depressed mood where I think this is the end of the world, and all I can think about is the suicide. And it's not that I want to commit suicide.
Are you depressed tonight?
Pardon?
Are you depressed tonight?
No.
You're not, okay.
No, I'm on my way back up. That's why I'm able to call and not cry.
Uh-huh.
And the one interesting thing, and I did find out that no, I would never commit suicide. The only reason I think about it is that's the only way I think that they can not stop the hurting.
It certainly would stop the hurting, all right.
Yeah, but right it's there. So definite.
It has to
deal perhaps, and I'll have to.
You have a distinct need to communicate in your relationship. Is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Sometimes we go in for counseling, and things improve, and we think, well, that's that, and then we get off the track again somewhere along the line,
mm-hmm.
and it's time to get back on the track. Maybe it's time to go back in for counseling again.
Yes, I do want to tell you what happened. This last time that I got very depressed, and I kept going over and over, and I knew what I was depressed about. At least I'm so sure I knew, and I just went to my family doctor, and I told him that I was very depressed. And of course, he said, well, I can see that you are, and he did put me on some type of a tranquilizer.
You're not in counseling now, huh?
No, not now. And, and it was, I was on it for a month, and I just took myself off because it tranquilized everything. It tranquilized the gut, and I became very constipated, so mm-hmm. I took myself off. But in that month, it was long enough to be on that, to stop the downward trend. And I thought, well, I was wondering if there was any group. It just to be able to talk to someone. I don't want to go into all this analysis again because I think we'd be rehashing old stuff. I was in counseling for off and on for 7 years,
mm-hmm.
and
I don't think I need that deep of a counseling anymore.
You mean you were in analysis?
Yeah.
For 7 years, yeah.
Okay. And for a long time, they said, well, we're treating the here and now. And the here and now didn't seem to help.
Well, there are different forms of counseling, of course.
Well, then
you live in the North Bay, right?
Santa Rosa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Family Service Agency in Santa Rosa tends to be get them in and get them out functioning, sort of a therapy technique. It's not long, usually not long-term, seven-year analysis, certainly.
Uh-huh.
And they work on a sliding fee scale. Would you like their phone number?
Yes, I would.
All right. Santa Rosa, 795-4534.
0534.
795? Yeah.
Oh, that's
Cotati,
Donut Bar?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
795-4534.
Alrighty.
So, would your husband go in for counseling also?
Would he?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know at this point. I really don't.
Probably the only way you'd know would be to ask him, huh?
Oh, I bet he would.
Mm-hmm. He would like the relationship to be better, I'm sure, huh?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, and he would, too?
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
Yeah. Okay.
All righty.
Either one of you gentlemen have anything to say? One of the, have you two ever practiced the ring-out technique at the end of the day?
Say it again.
The ring-out technique. Like, we as humans are like sponges. And I'll explain that to you in just a moment, but Ron has something to say first.
You mentioned that you learned how to fight. Was that sort of secondary, or was that the actual counseling that you were in?
Oh, no, I think it was secondary. I think I heard Ron speak before about something, you know, we've had such a, some phrase he used and so aptly laughed after, said that we've had such a perfect marriage, we've never fought. Well, that was like ours. And that's what I mean by having to learn how to fight to get out anger and not keep it in.
Well, I'll give you another phrase, which is called fair fight training.
Fair fight training?
Right, and this is something that you can find at some counseling centers and that some people do privately.
Uh-huh.
And if fighting is something that you really need to do, this is a constructive way to do it. I would like to sort of turn you on to possibly looking for it if other things aren't as helpful as they could be.
The reason I bring that up is because it does seem like we tend to hold in anger emotions, and yet I remember that one thing Beth said to me, and I've never forgotten it, that my true self seems to come out when I'm angry. Otherwise, my true emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, I seem to be rather controlled and hold the emotions in, measure words.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we both do this. Mm-hmm. Because we're definitely frightened of hurting one another, because evidently it's a threatening thing to both of us.
Or are you frightened of the other person's reaction?
I think so.
One of the, there's a technique that's called the I message, the you message routine. See, if you throw you messages in revealing how you feel,
mm-hmm.
You know what a you message is?
Yes, I've heard you speak about it many times.
Okay.
Right.
If you throw you messages at a person, that simply puts the person on the defensive in the corner, and they're going to fight back.
Yes.
That doesn't really accomplish too much. If you throw an I message, you are simply saying, I hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I really hurt, or I really feel happy, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're simply stating how you feel without putting the load on the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry?
Listening to you, I was thinking that if you're at all like me, it's much easier to express, it's much easier for me to express my angry and negative feelings than the more tender feelings. And I was wondering, when was the last time you risked sharing with your husband that you have an investment in the relationship and that you have a real need for him to tell you that he loves you?
Well, every now and then, I'll say, I've got to talk the things over with you, and I'll tell him my needs. And gee, he gets upset. God, he gets upset.
When you tell him your needs, how do you express that? Pretend I'm your husband.
Well, I can try and think of one that actually happened.
Okay. I just walked in the door from work.
Oh, let's see. Hi.
Hi, how are you? How'd your day go?
Yeah. Hey, did you have a nice day?
Yeah, so-so.
Oh. That's it?
Yeah, it was one of those days, just another working day. Where's the beer?
Well, I forgot to buy any today. Would you like me to go get you some?
Nah, sorry. I'll just sit and read the paper.
You would sit and read the paper for a while and find it, and I'd be out in the kitchen and put the stewing in pretty soon. If I got so stewed up, I'd say, hey, I need to talk to you. I really need to talk to you.
What about?
Could be go somewhere where we can be alone. Yeah. Without the kids being around.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, when I finish reading the paper, I'll join you in the kitchen. Okay, we're in the kitchen. What's on your mind?
John, do you love me?
Sure. What do you ask a question like that for?
Because I just don't feel loved, that's all. I just don't feel loved. I never hear you say, I love you.
Okay. When you say that, now, I'm not your husband now. When you say it in that fashion, how does he respond?
He sort of clams up.
Does he walk away?
No, not until we talked for a bit, and I have never walked away from an argument.
Uh-huh.
I just won't, and it ends when he walks away.
Well, it ends when he walks away.
Uh-huh.
One of the basic questions I would think that you need to get answered in counseling, you feel a commitment to the relationship,
mm-hmm.
is to find out if he feels a commitment to the relationship.
Well, how do you mean by a commitment to the relationship? If he comes home every night, if he's a good provider, what do you mean?
If he wants to stay...
Okay, I'm going to ask you then, as Don, my husband.
Yeah, all
right. You'd probably ask me, what's it all about? I'm faithful, I come home, and I'm always here, and Johnny on the spot. You always know where I'm at, and all this, and oh God, then I feel so dumb and so stupid for even having such, when all these factual things are laid before me, oh God, it leaves me speechless, because these are all true things. And then I just really get tongue-tied because I've been put on such a defensive that I can't really say. These deep inner feelings they seem so dumb than when he's brought out all these wonderful facts of what a wonderful person he is, and which he is.
Mm-hmm. And there you are, the wife who has cheated on him, huh?
Yeah, you better believe it.
Jerry?
I guess what I heard when you were talking to Don as your husband was instead of a clear communication of your need in relationship to your husband, the first thing that came out was an accusation of, you never tell me that you love me, you so-and-so, which would be the added to that statement, which of course is going to put him on the defensive.
Oh, is that how you heard it?
That's what I
heard. That was a you message, yeah.
It wasn't saying, I have this need, can you respond to my need? It was an accusation of, you're not responding to my need, damn it.